Hello, Peter Goodwin here for the Audio Journal of Oncology, reporting on fast and durable responses to a bispecific antibody therapy used in heavily pretreated multiple myeloma. The bispecific antibody talquetamab, classed as a T-cell redirecting therapy, as is CAR T-cell, by the way, achieved very high response rates in the monumental study reported at the American Society of Hematology's 2022 annual meeting in New Orleans. After his talk at the conference, I spoke with Ajay Chari, who is Professor of Medicine and Director of Clinical Research in the Multiple Myeloma Program at Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York. Now, you have been looking at a new antibody. It's called a bispecific antibody, and you've been getting some pretty interesting results in multiple myeloma. Can you tell me what you were trying to do? These are, I would hasten to say, phase one and phase two studies, but I think they have been getting noticed at the ASH conference, haven't they?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I think many people are familiar with antibodies, which, by the way, owe their legacy to myeloma, because in the 80s, a Nobel Prize was given for fusing a myeloma cell to a spleen cell. But we only had naked antibodies for much of this time. And a bispecific antibody is different in the sense that, like with all antibodies, it has a Y-shaped structure. But unlike typical antibodies, it binds two different targets. Here, one target is the immune cell known as a T cell with CD3, and the other target is a GPRC5D, which is a novel target in myeloma. It's overexpressed particularly on malignant plasma cells, less so on normal plasma cells, and also not on the hematopoietic stem cell compartment, which we think is a favorable finding. And finally, it is overexpressed also in heavily keratinized tissues, which may also explain some of the side effects.
Right, now, so you target the patient's own T cells, but also you target the myeloma. What's the aim of that therapy?
You basically can engage this patient's own T cells to try to attack the myeloma. And, you know, it's a little surprising how remarkable this whole approach has been, because these patients that with myeloma that are entering these studies are typically 5 to 6 lines of therapy over 6 years. They're usually in their late 60s, early 70s. And you wouldn't think that their T cells would even be robust and fit and in present enough to generate results, let alone the astounding results we're seeing.
It's known as talquetamab, this molecule, it's known as a T cell redirecting therapy. So that's something to do with harnessing the T cells and getting them to where they're needed, is it?
Yes, exactly. I think there's two broad strategies that are being used for T-cell redirection. One is CAR-T, which I'm sure a lot of people have heard, where you take the T-cells out, genetically modify them, and put them back, which is giving phenomenal results. But one of the downsides is you need to get a slot, you need to manufacture, and then you need to do chemo and then admit. It's a lengthy process. And it's, you know, the vein-to-vein time, which is when from the collection to the administration, can be 4 to 6 weeks. Here, in contrast, bispecific antibodies are off the shelf. They're not personalized, but they're ready to go. Every patient gets the same product. And that's one of the inherent benefits of this, not to mention also that CAR-Ts are typically being done in large academic centers with large transplant experience. Bispecifics currently, to be fair, have also been done in very similar settings. But the hope is, because these are off-the-shelf products, they could eventually get to the community. And that's the real excitement, that you can probably help a broader array of patients with these.
Right now, but the proof of the pudding is in the eating, and you've been doing a lot of eating, 288 patients, which is a big study for phase one and two. What did you do in this study?
Yeah, I would like to start by saying we're really excited to announce that the part one of this study, the phase one study, was just published in the New England Journal. And to distinguish this presentation from that, the New England paper included also over 200 patients that got a variety of doses from very low to very high, and both IV and subcutaneous formulations to look at the efficacy and safety. And based on that study, it informed this study, where we picked basically 3 different cohorts of patients. The first got, everybody in this study got subcutaneous only, no intravenous. One group got 0.4 milligrams per kilogram weekly. The second got 0.8 milligrams per kilogram every 2 weeks. And the third could have received either one of those doses. But these patients are really the unmet need, which is patients who've had prior T-cell redirection therapy.
Right. Now, that's prior T-cell redirection therapy. But all of your patients were relapsed and refractory, most of them with quite a lot of previous treatment.
Yeah, it's really important to highlight that because, you know, when you look at the overall population, the median lines of therapy was 5 lines over 6 years. 60% of these patients were high risk in some capacity, which is either high risk molecular disease, extramedullary disease, or ISS3. Those last two in particular have been characterized as being high risk even in the era of novel T-cell redirection therapy. So 95% of these patients were progressing on their most recent therapy, and about 3/4 of them had exhausted or were refractory to the 3 major classes, which is PIs, IMiDs, and CD38. So a very heavily treated population.
Right. Now, what you were looking for then was responses. You were looking for durability of responses, and you were looking for speed of response. What did you find?
Remarkably, in this kind of unmet need, we saw response rates of 73 to 74% in these first 2 cohorts. The responses were maintained in triple class refractory patients, pentadrug refractory patients, ISS3, high risk disease, lines of therapy. The only group that fared slightly less well is the extramedullary disease, which has been true of almost all therapies, including T-cell redirection. And even there, it was an impressive 50% response rate. The median time to response was 1 month, which is outstanding. And the median time to best response was slightly over 2 months, which is great because it means that these patients who had explosive disease, these are not CAR T cherry-picked patients with really indolent progression. These patients were benefiting very quickly in high percentages and quickly and rapidly and deeply.
It's
really exciting.
It sounds quite interesting. What did the patients think of this?
I think, well, this goes to a little bit of the side effects, but before I do that, I wanted to also highlight, because one of your questions was durability. And so we did see, first, the median overall survival was not reached. The median progression-free survival was 7.5 and 12 months, respectively, in the 2 cohorts. The median duration of response was about 9 and 13 months. And impressively, for those patients who had attained a complete remission, we don't have a median. They're still doing well. So I think very active agent. And to answer your question about the side effects and the patient experience, one of the side effects, the most common high-grade side effect was cytopenias, but even that was in less than a third of a patient and typically happened early. One of the really unique things about this agent is the infection profile, because when you compare this to other products in this space, particularly targeting BCMA, particularly bispecifics, we're struggling with these really severe infections. With this agent, the rates of grade 3-4 severe infections was only about 10 to 15%. When we look at COVID, about 10% of patients in both of these cohorts had COVID, but there were 2 deaths from COVID. And in the entire phase 1 study, no deaths in the New England Journal. That's important because now we have a data set of over 500 patients without significant COVID signal, whereas in the other studies, we're seeing significant COVID deaths. And we actually see when you measure these patients' ability to respond to a COVID vaccine, it is maintained. And lastly, the need for IVIG or immune boosting is only about 10%. So those are 2 very salient, important features. But then I would say that there's some other side effects. So cytokine release syndrome, which is when you activate the T cells, is quite common, about 70%+, which is primarily low grade and manageable. And that's a class effect of all bispecifics. But the unique side effects of this particular agent were basically 3 things. We saw effects on the skin, so rashes, typically early on. The nails became a little friable. And then the 3rd thing is taste, dysgeusia. That probably is the one that I think is the most impactful on quality of life. We did try oral hydrating agents. But one of the things I would say is that all of these side effects occurred as we were doing these higher doses. And so my personal belief is that the best way to manage these is, because the responses are so rapid and they're deep, we can quickly back off on the drug and keep patients at a lower dose. And to that point, only 5% of patients in both cohorts came off for adverse events, which is important because I think we're not trying to say that this, you know, there are, every drug has a side effect, but the rate of discontinuation is low, speaking to the manageability.
Now, you did 2 different dose levels, didn't you? So I seem to remember from my quick scanning of your work that there wasn't a difference. Is that right?
At a high level, we didn't see a major difference. I think if anything, the 800 every 2 weeks or 0.8 milligrams per kilogram had probably slightly sicker patients and maybe a slight trend towards better efficacy. However, I would caution overinterpretation because the follow-up is shorter with that group. But in terms of what might be helpful for people to know is the dose that was selected for the randomized phase 3s that are going on is the every 2-week dosing. which also is easier for patients, obviously, to have to come in less often. So I think it'll be exciting to see what those results are as well.
Now, clearly, you will be waiting for the phase three results, but what are your hopes about clinical implications of these findings if they're fulfilled with the larger study and the different design?
Well, there's so much interest and activity in this space, but almost all of it is targeting BCMA, the B-cell maturation antigen. So this is unique because it's a novel target. It's a first-in-class, off-the-shelf product. And so it fits a really big void. It already got breakthrough designation in June. The BLA or biologics application was submitted this week in December. The hope is that if it receives favorable review by the FDA, we may see within 6 months, some kind of a way for patients to get this. I think it'll still take some time for this to get to the community because these agents, while very safe and tolerable, the cytokine release syndrome, we need to transfer that knowledge and learning from these academic sites to the community, which is, I think, very doable. But to answer your question, the phase three studies are going on. So that'll be the confirmatory study. So even if this got an accelerated approval this year in this 6 months, it would need the confirmatory phase three for eventual full approval. But the other studies that are going on, I think, are also quite exciting because the side effect profile that I discussed with you is unique that it doesn't overlap with other myeloma agents. So this drug, and we know that most myeloma drugs, because myeloma is a genetically and immunologically complex disease, you need combination strategies. So because of the unique side effect profile, the drug is being combined with a lot of the backbone drugs in myeloma already. It's being combined with the sister bispecific known as teclistamab, which is really exciting because it's a non-chemo-containing regimen, just two bispecifics. And the third is also checkpoint inhibitors, because we think one of the reasons that these drugs may not continue to work is because the T cells get exhausted. So can we augment that? So these are the different strategies being taken. But I think it's really exciting for patients to have a non-BCMA option. And we've shown already in this cohort three, the drug works even when patients have failed prior T-cell redirection therapies.
Right. So you are on the way to justifying, if phase three has good results, justifying the use in relapsed and refractory multiple myeloma. What about earlier in a disease? Could it itself be a backbone agent, talquetamab?
I think absolutely. The ability of a drug to move up earlier is based on, I think, efficacy, safety, quality of life. I think we are clearly seeing efficacy. The safety profile, I think the lack of infection signal cannot be overstated, right? Because it's a shame to lose a patient in stringent complete remission with myeloma to an infection. And that's what's really challenging with some of these other products. We're not seeing that here. I do think, though, that in order for this drug to really move up comfortably into earlier lines of therapy, we have to get the right dose and schedule. Because this patient population who's heavily treated, their risk-benefit calculus and quality of life acceptance might be different than in an earlier line of therapy where they'll have a lot of other options. So the hope is that maybe by getting a less dose-intense schedule, we can get this amazing response in combination and then also not have, say, the taste loss. So that would be the goal. But I think there's a lot of excitement in that. And of course, you know, the ability of this drug, I think one of the things that still has an unmet need is the extramedullary high-risk myeloma, right? We need new drugs there desperately. And I think there would be great interest in trying these novel therapies earlier for those patients as soon as could be allowed.
Now, could this bispecific talquetamab be used in other diseases, or is this a myeloma-specific agent?
The GPRC5D was specifically chosen because it is so myeloma specific. And that may be why, for example, we don't see the low blood counts that we see as much with some of the other targets. But I do think it's really important to highlight that this whole approach of bispecific antibodies is being done across the malignancies. So ALL already had a drug called blinatumomab a few years ago, but it's a relatively rare disease. Myeloma has the first bispecific with perhaps a second one coming down. But I know that lymphomas also have bispecific, also imminently going to be approved. And then these are also being studied in leukemia and solid tumors. So there's every reason to hope that if you can bring T cells to the cancer, they recognize these cancer cells and do their thing.
And if you combine it, you did mention checkpoint inhibitors, would that be a very powerful technique of bringing the T cells to where they're needed? Or would it perhaps be too powerful?
I think it's exactly the right question. I think most likely we have to be thoughtful about when we combine, right? Because I would say that the drug, first of all, is working in 70% of patients. So, and it's deep, durable remission. So you may not need to give everybody combination from day one. You can let the cytokine release pass. You can let the blood counts improve. And then you decide, okay, have I achieved a complete remission? Well, there's not, you know, if you're already getting an A+, what else is there? But if you're getting anything less than that, that may be the time to add in your novel agents, whether it's a checkpoint, conventional drugs. So if you look, most of the bispecific combination studies are not adding them from the get-go, because if you already have a 70% rate of CRS, and now you're coming in with a checkpoint to further augment T cells, there's very little to gain, but a lot to lose in that first cycle, I think. But if you do that strategically at cycle two or beyond, that would make more sense.
Well, with your very encouraging study announced at ASH this year, what would you say are the take-homes for cancer doctors around the world?
Bispecifics are here, and they're going to be arriving at your doorstep imminently. We need to be thoughtful about target selection, patient selection, adverse event management. And then this is just the beginning. Combinations, earlier lines of therapy, this is the future. I think I would close by saying historically in myeloma, prior to say 3 years ago, to get a new drug approved with this so-called accelerated approval strategy, which is where you have an unmet need disease, the benchmark in myeloma is 20 to 30% for 3 months. Now, 70 to 100% is the new 20 to 30. And these remissions are more than doubled what we've seen in patients who've already exhausted more drugs than they were before this era, right? So you're taking sicker patients and getting better results. It's an astounding era in clinical research in heme malignancy.
And are bispecifics likely to remain in the hematologic malignancy domain, or could they go into solid tumors, do you think?
They could, I think, very well go into any, you know, and maybe not even just, there's also work being done in non-malignant spaces as well. But I think if it's an immune-mediated problem, there's every reason for thinking this strategy might work.
Well, clearly, CAR T cell technology is really interesting. So are bispecifics. They've got different properties, different pluses and minuses. How do you compare them?
Well, it's interesting. I was asked to debate this at our European Hematology Conference a few months ago, and I was assigned bispecific. So what I said is, if you did a hypothetical randomized study where every patient was assigned to one or the other, what might that look like? Because that's really what people want to know. I would say that what was unique, CAR Ts are phenomenal. I have great responses with patients off treatment for years. But the problem is the number of patients that have been allowed to sign CAR T consents is few, because every site only had a few slots and you picked the best patient. Then the patient had to get collected. Then they actually had to get the manufacturing done, and you had to keep their disease somewhat controlled, because if they were crashing and quickly progressing, they may not even get to the infusion. And then there's the infusion, and you're allowed to give bridging chemo during that period, so that could affect your PFS. And then finally, there's the actual administration, and there's count recovery, support, infections. So in contrast, bispecific is off the shelf, ready to go. So I would submit that if you had an intention to treat analysis, unless your CAR T's PFS is over a year, some of that PFS is coming from patient selection and bridging chemo, not from just the efficacy. And so the other thing I would say is that my closing slide for this debate was, I think the CAR Ts are like Rolls Royce Phantoms. We all want them. They're amazing cars. They are beautiful, but they're hard to get. It's not just the cost, because let's face it, bispecifics being given every month are also going to be expensive. So I'm not going to talk about cost, but Rolls Royce Phantoms are hard to get your hand on. But what makes the world go around are the Toyota Corollas. And I think that's what the bispecifics, I think, are going to be like, because there's every reason to hope that these could be brought to the community door oncologist near you as a patient, so you don't have to keep going to these academic centers. But I think if you have stable disease and you can get to a CAR T, by all means, it's outstanding.
Does the bispecific give you any hope, perhaps, of addressing some of the cancer inequalities in the world then?
Yeah, it's a really important question. I think first, myeloma affects African-Americans in a higher frequency than non-African-Americans, and yet the representation in clinical trials is woefully low. And I think every cancer is struggling with that. But when you have a cancer like myeloma that's more prevalent in African-Americans, it's particularly striking. There's actually some data recently that even CAR Ts, which work amazingly well, may be disparately not helping African-Americans and Hispanics as well. So we need to have more representation. And I think what the other thing that the bispecifics, because studies have shown, for example, in Veterans Hospital, when patients have comparable healthcare, regardless of racial or ethnic background, the outcomes are equivalent. And the VA system does a great job of that because it equalizes the care. But when you have disparities in access, referrals for clinical trial, academic subspecialty consultation, those are barriers that we really need to work on as a community. And I think bispecifics can help with that, because if these can be brought to the community, it'll eliminate one of those barriers that currently plagues the system.
That was Ajay Chari, Associate Professor of Medicine and Director of Clinical Research in the Multiple Myeloma Program at Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York, for the Audio Journal of Oncology, reporting from the American Society of Hematology Annual Meeting in New Orleans. I'm Peter Goodwin.